Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. The time is 8:23. We're 3 minutes late. We were scheduled to start on a delayed schedule today. Today is Thursday, February 11th, 2010. With me today is Senator Ellis, Senator Huggins, Senator Thomas, and Senator Egan. We have three bills on the agenda today. The first one up will be Senate Bill 83, Vocational Rehabilitation Committee. And we're going to move on to two new bills, Senate Bill 199, Medicaid Coverage for Dentures, and finish up with Senate Bill 159, Workers' Compensation for Funeral Expenses. The first item of labor today is Senate Bill 83 by the governor regarding Vocational Rehabilitation Committee. This is the second hearing. We heard this bill for the first time on Monday, February 8th. At that hearing, the bill was introduced and we took public testimony. We set the bill aside to give members the opportunity to express their concerns and to review what took place at the committee, and we have it has not been brought to our attention that we've had problems with the bill from the committee members. So the intent is to give the members opportunity today to ask any questions on the bill, and if there's no concerns on the bill, to look to the committee for their wishes. Do we have any questions? Senator Ellis, do you have a motion for us to move the bill? Can you move the bill? Senate Bill 83?
Yeah, we'll keep it brief at ease.
Sure, we'll brief at ease. We'll come back on the record. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that CS for Senate Bill 83 be moved from committee with attached physical note and individual comments.
Okay, we have a motion to move CS for Senate Bill 83 from committee with individual recommendations and attached physical notes. Do we have objection?
No.
Seeing no objection, we'll move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral, which is rules. And we'll go on to the next item on the agenda. Senate Bill 199 by Senator Ellis provides for a two-year funding cycle for Medicaid coverage on dentures. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent is to introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. And with us today to present the bill is Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning to you and the members of the committee. For the record, my name is Johnny Ellis. I represent downtown and midtown Anchorage in the Alaska Senate. And if it's okay with you, Mr. Chairman, my staffer, Max Hensley, who's working with me on the bill, has joined us at the table. He's an expert on the fiscal notes and some of the technical aspects of the legislation. Mm-hmm. Appreciate you bringing up the bill in a prompt manner, and thank Senators Egan, Olson, Huggins, and Thomas for co-sponsoring the legislation. Also want to thank the department here at the outset for working on the fiscal note between the HES committee and this committee so that this could be done at a reasonable cost in the short term and zero cost to the state over the long term. And we can get into those details later if you would wish. In your packet is an opinion piece I published in the Senior Voice, OPEG's statewide newspaper for senior citizens, which tells the story of a man who walked into my office and threatened to commit suicide after his very negative interaction with the folks at Medicaid Adult Dental Program. They aren't bad people, they're good people in fact, but it was a very negative interaction because of the statutes and regulations that are currently on the books. This is the kind of thing that drives a lot of people crazy and gives government a bad name in spite of a lot of good folks' intentions when this kind of problem is facing our constituents. This man had qualified for dentures under the adult dental program, but had been told that he had a choice. He could have either his upper dentures or his lower dentures, with the other half to be installed in the following fiscal year. His question to me, and it was hard to understand him because he had next to no teeth, so it was hard to understand what he was saying. But basically, my staff and I got the gist that he was protesting and saying how was he supposed to chew his food with half a set of teeth. Still not sure how that story turned out, Mr. President. We lost contact. Hope that gentleman is okay, but it brought home to me just how dire the situation. It seems like a small thing when we're sitting here in the halls of government, but to an individual, it was a dire situation. Last year, I was proud to vote, along with all the members of this committee, to remove the sunset on the successful program that allows Medicaid patients to receive preventative and restorative dental care, because studies have shown that if you help people take care of their dental health, it prevents a lot of expensive other physical health problems down the road. So it's the smart and cost-effective thing to do. However, when the bill came through our body, I raised the story of the man in my office on the floor and promised that if a solution were not found either in that piece of legislation in an amendment or through regulatory changes, I would be back with this legislation, and here we are today. Allowing patients to receive a full set of dentures at once is crucial for their oral health and will reduce the impact of Medicaid patients on Alaska's dentists, and many of them are here today. Here with us today are members of the Alaska Dental Society on their annual fly-in, including Dr. Dave Logan. I appreciate his help very much with this legislation. He's the one who started to tell me stories from Southeast Alaska about the current situation, and I hope he'll share those with you in his testimony in just a moment. Also in your packets are letters of support from a wide variety of providers and advocates, including AARP Alaska, Primary Care Association, Public Health Association, and the state's joint advocacy boards, Commission on Aging, Mental Health Trust Authority. I won't go through the whole list, but it's quite a list of supporters. The shortest description of this bill is that it allows patients who are eligible for dentures under the Medicaid Adult Dental Program to essentially forward fund the complete set of dentures. Current law limits patients to $1,150 in preventative or restorative services per year, and I predict the dentist will be back here in the near future pointing out that that dollar figure established in statute is not adequate, but that we'll save that for another day. A cap which is designed to cover one half of a set of dentures. That was the plan. In testimony before this committee in 2006, the designers of the program stated their intention that a patient would receive their uppers on June 30th and their lower dentures on the first day of the next fiscal year, July 1st. As you can imagine, that has proved not to be practical. Nobody likes the I told you so guy, but we told them so, that this would be a problem. Dental emergencies cannot be scheduled around the state's fiscal calendar, and patients are being hurt and dentists are being inconvenienced, and things are being made more expensive by this rule. To be clear, this does not increase the total amount of benefits a patient is eligible for. That's the biggest question I get. Are you trying to give more benefit here? And that's not the case. It simply allows them to access the funding they would have received next year in the current year in order to complete a relatively expensive procedure in the most medically effective and cost-effective way for the state and for the dentist and the patient. That's it, Mr. President. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you having the bill before us.
Okay, thank you. We have any questions from the committee members? Does the trustee aide want to put himself on the record and speak to the bill, please?
Mr. Chairman, Max Hensley, staff to Senator Ellison. I was just here for questions.
Okay. We have no questions. We'll go to, then we'll go in the room here. And we'll ask John Sherwood. You can identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and then speak to the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm John Sherwood. I'm with the Department of Health and Social Services, and I thank you for this opportunity to testify. I think, first off, I'd like to say the department conceptually likes the idea of what this bill is trying to accomplish in relation to providing dentures to adult Medicaid recipients. For adults needing upper and lower dentures, I think we agree that it's best if they can get them at the same time. And as was previously mentioned, we noticed that there was one, we noted that there was one workaround when we originally started the adult preventive dental program, as alluded to, that timing, getting one at the end of one fiscal year, the other at the start of the other fiscal year. We acknowledge that doesn't always work for folks. And if this bill passed, it would allow people to get their dentures in the same year, and essentially their 2 years worth of their limit could be used up in 1 year. They would then go the next year without still living under that same combined limit. The department does project expenditures for this bill initially. In the first 2 years, we think there would be increased costs for dentures as people essentially start doubling up, if you will, getting both dentures in 1 year, as opposed to stretching them out over 2 years. And we think that's going to occur over the first 2 years of the program. Our experience is not everybody takes advantage of a new benefit immediately. So we're projecting about a little over $900,000 in the first year, about $300,000 of that would be general funds, and then about $467,000 in the second year, and a little over $200,000 of that would be general funds. There are some administrative costs for startup, and we did amend our fiscal note as we have worked on this issue. We found a system solution to a way to modify our claims processing system we weren't initially able to identify, which would allow us to make a change and automate the two-year limit. We thought we were going to have to do it manually. We do have some concerns about whether or not we can get that automation in place before we freeze the system. Our claims processing system, as you are aware, we are in the process of replacing our current claims processing system for a new one. It's you know, the first time in over 20 years we've done that. So, but at a certain point, we have to freeze the old system, stop making changes, and wait till we bring the new system up. And we're not sure, given the timing, we'll be able to do that. Get this change into our system prior to that freeze. As a result, we have requested one position for 1 year if manual tracking is required, so that we do have the ability to track the claims manually and apply our service limits and authorizations appropriately. And I'd be willing to answer any questions that the committee has.
There is some concern on the fiscal note, and as I recall, there was initial review that there might take up to two positions, and now we're looking at maybe one position for 1 year, and there's still concern on that particular issue. So we'll work on that in coming days to try to alleviate that issue. Also, the net effect, and I think as we move on, we'll explore potential positive impacts dealing with travel and so on and so forth as we move the people that live in the rural areas into the communities to get their denture work done. So I think we need to continually flush that issue out. So I'm not comfortable with the fiscal note as it currently sits before the committee.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. I did want to add that if we are able to implement our system changes before the freeze in our new system, we would not hire the additional position for that year, and that would reduce the cost. We feel like we need to prepare for that contingency. There is a strong likelihood we might need it, but it's not certain, and if we don't need it, we won't hire the position. As to the savings, we have done research to try and identify ways to quantify potential savings. I mean, certainly anecdotally, we know that there are going to be situations where it would reduce, potentially reduce the travel or other expenses. With the limited data we have, this program is just a little more than 2 years old. We don't have data that clearly shows savings in a way we can quantify. We really don't see a lot of travel expenses associated with providing a second denture at this point. Some of the expenses that might be incurred, some of the things we hear about, like emergency room visits as a result of bad oral health, we don't necessarily have data in our system that would identify that related to a dental condition. And some of the individuals involved are also Medicare eligible, so those cost savings in primary care or acute care as a result of better dental care might also accrue to the Medicare program in addition to the Medicaid program. So those are some of our concerns about trying to be trying to quantify a savings. We took a pretty broad approach to how we cost this out. We think it's a fair approach, but it's a pretty general approach because we simply lack the data to kind of drill down into the specifics of how much, you know, of the particulars will savings we'd experience.
Mr. Chairman, drill down was a dental joke. Mr. Sherwood was attempting some humor there at the dentist's expense.
I also wanted to note we were attempting to have our dental officer, Brad Whistler, online. He's in Atlanta. He's been at meeting with the CDC. He was having some technical difficulties, and I apologize if he's unavailable. If he is online, he might be able to answer questions.
We'll work that situation out as we go forward. He is online, but unless we have a particular question for him, it's fine. Do we have any other questions for the department? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the fiscal notes, and I realize it's a relatively new program, but putting this in place, it would seem that you would at least have some guesstimation as what it could do. And we're talking about, even though it's $1.5 million, it'd be spread out over the entire future now. So it would be good to have had that number, at least a guesstimation, even on the conservative side, to help us, because I know there were comments and testimony by dentists themselves, the practitioners, saying what their anticipated savings were. And also regarding the electronics, I just wanted more of a question there, is the idea of, is that a contracted, are you contracting with somebody to redo that, or are you guys doing that in-house?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, we contract with ACS. It's not the phone company, it's affiliated computer systems to operate our system, and they are also providing our new claims processing system. So we would contract with them to make the modifications to our claims processing system.
And just one.
Go ahead, follow up.
We're not, thank you. Is that being done in conjunction with the dental offices, the practitioners, their offices, as to what they would like to see or the concerns that they had over the procedure or the existing procedure?
Through the chair, I think my understanding is this would be more of a technical fix to allow the system to track expenditures over 2 years. It wouldn't really affect the electronic interaction between the dental offices and our system. That would be separate. I think we would hope that our new system we're purchasing would address some of those issues. Beyond that, I really can't say at this time.
I would hope that we would include them in anything that is involved with the filing of claims, just simply to gain some insight as to what the problems are from their end of that.
Through the chair, I know that our contractor and our department has worked and will continue to work with providers as they bring our new system up to get input. Again, I think with regard to this change, it's really an internal change, not one that affects that interface.
I hope they agree with you. Thank you.
Are there questions for the department? Does the administration support the bill?
This bill is under consideration. At this time, we don't have a position.
We have two fiscal notes. One note is from the Department of Medical Assistance Administration. This note represents the department's request for the one additional staff person to be funded with 86.4 thousand in federal receipts and 61.5 thousand in general funds. The second fiscal note from the department is for the adult preventive dental program, showing the impact of the combined 2 year worth of service in one fiscal year. The cost in FY11 is 308.6 thousand in general funds and 626.5 thousand in federal receipts. In FY12, that cost levels out to 201,000 in general funds and 266,000 in federal funds. And what would I like to do now, if we don't have any further questions from the department, we'll go to the in the room. We have, looks like David Logan. You could introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Logan. I'm here representing the Alaska Dental Society, and I'm a dentist here in Juneau. I'd like to start by thanking Senator Ellis and Senators Egan, Thomas, and Huggins for co-sponsoring Senate Bill 199. We appreciate their bringing this bill forward. As Senator Ellis so easily put it there, it's just a bill that makes sense for everybody. It makes sense for Medicaid recipients in the state. It allows them to receive a full set of dentures, at the same time eliminating the problem of having half of the teeth to function with. It makes sense from the standpoint of the dentists. We're able to provide a full set of dentures in the same number of appointments that we can provide a single set of dentures. And it makes sense from the state because ultimately, we believe that there will be a large savings increase when you start to remove some of the damaged teeth in both arches. The medical costs will drop down. It may not show strictly in terms of dental expenditures because a lot of those costs are shifted over for ER costs, which compared to dental reimbursements are a much, much more expensive way to deliver services. It will eliminate a lot of travel costs coming in, denture appointments or denture construction for dentists there. It's a multiple appointment procedure, generally separated by some lab time in between procedures. So it's not a case where you can fly somebody into town and have them just stay while the denture is being constructed. Typically, it's multiple trips. And when you start looking even to fly somebody from Sitka to Juneau for dentures, which I've done a couple of those cases, and a letter about one is detailed, I believe, in the packets that you all received there. Ultimately, the travel costs wind up dwarfing the actual reimbursement costs for what the dentures are by a factor of many. There, by the time you look at plane fare, hotel fare, et cetera, for multiple visits, it's well over what that expenditure amount is for the actual dentures. Speaking towards the medical costs, just by happenstance, I saw a patient last week in my office. Patient came in, actually patient called. We had very difficult time understanding what the problem was because he couldn't really speak clearly. It took two staff members on the phone to try and determine what exactly was going on, what his needs were. We brought him into the office. We took an x-ray. He brought his grandson in. English was a second language for him, but he did speak English. It just wasn't his native language. His grandson was able to help a little bit with that. He had about half of his teeth remaining on the upper arch. He had just about four teeth remaining on the lower arch. Half of the teeth were abscessed. The other half that weren't abscessed had cavities in that were, if not into the nerves, very close to the nerves. So he had a situation where he was having pain from abscesses. He was having a pain from teeth that were just plain hurting because of the depth of the cavities. It was an easy diagnosis as to what needed to happen dentally. His remaining teeth needed to be removed for medical reasons. I mean, he simply would not, there wasn't a tooth in there that you would save at that point. And so we're in the process of managing medically. There's some medical issues to deal with before the extractions can be done. He'll have all his teeth extracted very shortly, but then I will be left with a difficult situation of trying to decide if I'm giving him an upper denture or a lower denture afterwards. And Senator Ellis's bill, while it certainly doesn't solve the initial problem of the fact that he's having intense pain from a variety of sources, at least it makes the rehabilitation a lot more sensical from the standpoint of giving him some dignity and some teeth to chew with. And I would be happy to answer any questions from the committee if there's any questions.
Any question? Okay, thank you. You got Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Dr. Logan, for your continued testimony on this. And I was curious, just to make sure we understand, you talked about tooth removal being done, but also the molds, is that they're separated now, right? It has to the physical work that's done has to be separated in the years. You can't just do it and then bill it at a different time. Is that my understanding, that you are required, if that's the way it's supposed to be done, that in the separate year? So the economy here is that basically it can all be done at one time, not only saving trips even from Sitka, but it's never been a very pleasurable experience, excuse me, to go to the dentist and have people sticking needles in my mouth. The fewer times I could have that done, the better I would feel about it. But I just wanted to make sure that that's, what we're talking about, that physical work that's done. And also the similar question as asked of the department, the electronic records and filings. Are you guys involved to the point that you believe that the solution is going to take care of the concerns that you have voiced to members of the committee as well as myself? Do you think you're being included enough, I guess, is the question on the solutions and the changes that are being made?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, the initial part of your question regarding the physical process of making the dentures, that's correct. There's not knowing a fixed date for when you would start on a second set of dentures, there's really no way to take accurate molds ahead of time. It has to be done at the time that the dentures are going to be constructed. So all you can do, and you wind up ultimately taking the same set of molds regardless of whether you're actually constructing the denture or not. You don't even save on the cost there because that has to be factored in the construction of the denture. And just from a technical standpoint, it can sometimes be a problem trying to make one arch of teeth towards another arch of teeth if they're not in a very good position. You either have to sacrifice teeth in the adjacent arch or modify them in some way, or you have to modify the denture that you're constructing to go around a misshapen arch. So either way, ultimately it winds up being a very large technical problem to deal with there. Regarding the Medicaid electronic records and so forth, we're not entirely certain how the new system is going to work there. I do appreciate Senator Thomas hosting a meeting last year that we had with the Medicaid folks, and that was really our first real insight into how the process works. So I'm not really able to answer how this would fit in with the process, any problems that we'll have or potential problems that may exist there. That's kind of an unknown for the Dental Society.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no further questions, we'll ask our next participant, Mark Prater. You can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Yes, I'm Mark Prater. I'm a general dentist from Wasilla, and I'm here to, of course, speak about the Medicaid bill. I've practiced for 33 years in Alaska, and I do take Medicaid, and I see this set of patients that we will be treating. And I want to point out that basically in our office, the cost that is involved with this, basically as a general dentist, I donate approximately half of my fee in order to be able to do it at this cost. So, we're teaming up with the Medicaid to do whatever we can. Certainly I have practiced in the bush in the past. I see the travel issue as a major problem. When I was in Kotzebue and in outlying villages. Often we had to send patients all the way to Anchorage, and in some cases it would be multiple visits, or they would do things one at a time. The cost was just staggering for that, so I can see that as a real positive thing. As far as savings on emergency visits, I see that as a major deal, getting all the teeth out at once so that all the infected, you know, and hopeless teeth can be done at one time. I've certainly had to remake complete sets of dentures before because of seeing a patient that just had one denture, an upper or a lower, and trying to make teeth to fit against those and not coming up with a satisfactory result, just have to make the whole thing over again. Basically, we would have to do that at our own cost, but you can see that that's a major issue. And so I'm certainly in support of this, and so y'all have any questions?
Any questions? Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
We could have Mr. Sherwood come back. Mr. Sherwood, do we have any further questions for the department? Seeing none, just as, you know, as a little side note, if I understand that the department is continuing to review the bill and may or may not take a position on the bill in the future, is that correct? A positive position or a negative position?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It's still under consideration. I don't know if there will be a position.
Okay. As we go forward over the next couple of weeks and continue to work on the fiscal note issue, which I think we're going to take a look at, I'd just like to encourage the administration to look at this bill and consider the impact of having to eat lutefisk for a year because you only had one set of plates. And that may encourage a position on the bill for those of us that have had the delight of having lutefisk on holidays. Senator Thomas.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one thing, again, about the changes to the records and the filings and those things. I would really encourage you to work with the practitioners. I think that's important. I'd hate to see next year or whatever happens, we have another bill again that attempts to adjust things. And, you know, it just seems to me that it makes sense when you have that opportunity and an association to deal with and try and make sure that we solve everything as well as we can at one point in time rather than taking it up over a matter of years or having disgruntled folks and more inconvenience for patients and that type of thing. So, and more expensive process because people are not being able to get their electronic records, so they're continuing to file them manually, that kind of thing. So just one of my concerns.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to take the opportunity to encourage the department to really think about this because all too often we as a state and the bureaucrats of the state are critical of the health professionals that won't reach out and service segments where they're underfunded by programs. In this case, we just listened to Dr. Prater talk about he essentially does it for free as far as compensation to himself. And what a grand opportunity. I mean, and these are my grandparents and your grandparents and my kids on. And it appears for just a mere window here that we can make this happen. Everybody's a winner, and there are lots of Dr. Praters out there, and we just like to give them more business when it's helping our people that are in the twilight of their lifespan. Thank you.
Senator Ellis, any closing comments before we set the bill aside?
Mr. Chairman, it's, you know, it goes without saying that it's a good program. It was Murkowski that decided in his administration to bring the state of Alaska, one of the last states, into the adult dental under Medicaid. That was a positive thing. That was had lots of bipartisan support. But then in getting rid of the sunset, there were some folks that wanted to have some cost control measures in place. I understand that. This was one that was ill-advised. This one didn't, good intentions to control costs, but it wasn't thought through enough by the department and by folks in the legislature. And so we find now that it's caused problems for everyone, the state, the patients, and the dentists. So this is pretty straightforward cleanup bill. We do need to work with the department to figure out how best to move forward here with the resources we have. But good program, bipartisan support. We were trying to control some costs in when we made the program permanent, but this cost control measure was ill-advised, hasn't worked out. And, you know, like I said, this is the kind of thing that drives people crazy and gives government, good people in government, a bad name. And I think we're smart enough to figure this out before our 90 days are up.
Thank you, Senator Ellis. We'll set this bill aside, go on to our next piece of labor today. Senate Bill 159. This bill would increase the amount paid by workers' compensation for funeral expenses. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent is to introduce the bill, take public testimony, and then set the bill aside. And with us today to present the bill is Senator Passman. Senator Passman, if you come forward.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, or the region you represent, I should say. And then speak to the bill, please.
Yes, Senator Joe Passman, Senator for Fairbanks and North Pole. If I could just indulge the committee for one moment in the dental bill that you're drilling into. What you want to know is whether the witnesses will tell the tooth, the whole tooth, and nothing but the tooth.
Oh, my God. Senator Passman, good thing we don't have the cameras on today.
Anyway, I thank you for your brief and
if you can present your bill, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present the merits of Senate Bill 159. This is an act increasing the maximum funeral expenses payable as a workers' compensation death benefit and providing for an effective date. This bill addresses Section 1 of the statute saying that reasonable and necessary funeral expenses are increased from $5,000 to a more appropriate level of $10,000. During the last 10 years, there have been an average of 26 fatalities per year in the state of Alaska that require payment of funeral expenses under the worker compensation statutes. In that decade, the most number of deaths in a year was 39, and the fewest number of deaths in a year was 15. Last year, there were 17 fatalities in the state of Alaska that required the payment of workers' compensation funeral expenses. In addition to the traditional funeral services, graveside services, or cremation, the loved ones of the deceased must also choose to pay for such services as embalming, casket or urns, tombstones, transportation, and a wide variety of other necessary services. Mr. Chairman, these funeral expenses easily surpass the current $5,000 maximum benefit, and those expenses in most cases will in fact exceed the $10,000 maximum benefit if this legislation were to be passed. The payment of the death benefit is granted to the survivors. That's the whole point of the bill. And each loss of life is no doubt tragic to the loved ones of the deceased, and the payment of the funeral expenses to the survivors is a very, very small fraction of the overall cost of the state's workers' compensation to the system. This is significantly less than 1%. It's about 1/10 or 1/100 of a percent. It's just an extremely small cost of the total system cost, which is over $200 million annually. If Senate Bill 159 is implemented, there is essentially no fiscal impact to the state of Alaska, and its fiscal note is in fact zero. And the National Council of Compensation Insurance, NCCI, estimates that if Senate Bill 159 is implemented, overall worker compensation system costs in Alaska will increase by less than 0.1%. Current funeral benefit has been unchanged for a decade, and since then the cost of funeral expenses, like everything else, has risen significantly. So I would urge your support of this legislation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you or the committee may have.
You answered one of them, which was the impact of the premiums, and alluded to the other one, the cost from roughly 2,500, we doubled it to 5,000 in the year 2000. So could you give us kind of an idea of if you happen to know rough ranges of funeral costs, what a widow or widower is facing when someone dies?
Sure. Sure, Mr. Chair. It is not uncommon to have funeral expenses $12,000 to $15,000 range. I think a very cheap funeral service now is certainly over $5,000. And so while this isn't designed to pay for a luxurious funeral, it's designed to pay for a funeral that is, I think, appropriate for those that lose their life in their line of work. So it's not designed to pay for the highest cost of funeral services in Alaska. It's designed to compensate for reasonable and moderate funeral expenses.
Okay. Any other questions, initial questions for Senator Pascan? We do have one zero fiscal note from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And seeing no questions, Senator Pascan, we'll go on to the public hearing portion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I'll just start at the top and kind of go down. There's only three on the list, so for those of you that are curious on the length. Hikas? You're going to have to help the chairman with the pronunciation so the next go around I get it right, but if you could come forward. Tina Hikes? Okay. Yeah, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and I'll pay particular attention on the introduction.
My name is Trina Hikes. I'm the Director of Workers' Compensation for the State of Alaska.
Pull your microphone a little closer, please, so we can hear you. Thank you. And then go ahead and restate that so we can pick it up.
For the record, my name is Trina Hikes. I'm the Director of Workers' Compensation for the State of Alaska.
Thank you. And the departments?
Currently, we don't yet have a position on the bill. I hope to have one early next week for the committee. Okay. I signed up for questions. If there's any particular questions I could answer, I would add to a question the committee had a moment ago. The other day, I Googled the average cost for a funeral, excluding burial and cemetery charges, and it's between $6,000 and $7,000 just for the casket and the funeral home costs. It doesn't include the cemetery and the burial charges.
Okay. And could maybe you could help us get back to the committee later with an idea on the cost, because we know that, you know, we have to get to those last two issues in a funeral and then also if you could kind of take a look at the range from the cremation versus a burial, so we can just get a feel for that range.
I will.
Do you have any questions for the department? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. And Ms. Hikes, thank you very much. My question for you is insurance that workers have. Could you just give us a quick oversight of overview of the system and what sort of insurance, if any, is available to workers in the State of Alaska that you're aware of based on your position?
Could we pull the mics in? They're having trouble picking them up.
Thank you. I assume from your question, Senator, that you're asking for an overall picture of benefits that are available under workers' compensation?
Yes. And in other institutional pieces, it may be outside of workman's compensation, but it's an insurance program that's offered structurally by unions or worker or employers that are recurring. In other words, sources that people would pay for their funeral out of that's paid by a system.
For work-related deaths, it would be the workers' compensation system that would pay it presently up to $5,000 plus. In addition, there are ongoing death benefits payable to the survivors under the statutory scheme laid out in 2330-215, AS 2330-215. Beyond that, as to avenues available for payment, beyond that would be up to a private insurance plan or I wouldn't know about that. The unions particularly, that would be something you might want to ask unions. But as far as the Workers' Comp Act is, goes, it's the $5,000 for the burial expenses at this time.
Right. So, follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if we double from $5,000 to $10,000, somebody pays for that. Do you have a large account, or what's the source of paying for the doubling of the amount?
That would come from the workers' compensation insurance carrier that the employer has contracted with to provide workers' compensation insurance. And the overall increase in premium, as Senator Prasfan just stated, would be 0.1%. So, for example, if I were an employer and I paid a $1,000 premium per year, it would cost me an additional dollar for that year if you increased it from $5,000 to $10,000, according to the NCCI study.
Yeah, thank you.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along the lines of Senator Huggins' question, then there is no coordination of benefits. You say you wouldn't know, or but does that necessarily mean that if there were a benefit available, if there were a benefit available, there is no coordination of benefits anyhow?
No, the workers' compensation insurance carrier would be paying up to the statutory maximum for their funeral.
Okay.
And it would not, in other words, I think what you're wondering, if I understand through the chair, Senator Thomas, is if they had a private insurance for funerals, would that insurance also provide money? It may, at this point, if above the $5,000. But workers' comp insurer would be obligated to pay the first $5,000.
Okay.
If there were secondary insurance, okay, they would be liable
so
for the
primary, basically. Like
exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for the department?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Don Etheridge.
Don Etheridge on behalf of the Alaska State AFL-CIO, and thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for discussing this bill, and I'd like to thank Senator Pascaven for introducing it. We are very supportive of the bill. Funeral costs have gone up dramatically. I've recently experienced that here a few years ago, and I was just astounded with the costs were when they start talking to bury a loved one. And in these cases, it's a loved one that's been hurt on the job, and usually in these cases, they lose the income of that person that has died, and they can't afford to start picking up additional funeral costs and so forth for those that don't have extra insurances or extra ways of covering it. So we think it's an appropriate increase and would support it. And on the increases to the workers' comp fund, also some of that is paid by individuals that work. Thank you.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thanks, Don. Good to see you. In respect to what you just said at the end, if it's a dollar for the employer for the insurance, my assumption that the system then would have a larger contribution from the employee, 50 cent on the dollar or 75 or 25, is that
I'm not sure what the percentage is, sir.
Yeah, but it, I mean, is it an increase? I mean, I'm just trying to say again.
I believe so.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear, I mean, what it is or is not, so we know what we're doing.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you for your testimony today. Barbara Huff.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barbara Huff-Technitz. I'm the Director of Legislative and Governmental Affairs for Teamsters Local 959, and I'd like to go on record supporting Senate Bill 159. I think it's already been mentioned, funeral expenses have not increased in over a decade or so. But I think the flip side, we've talked a little bit about the impact or the financial impact for the employers out there, But if you look statistically, and unfortunately I didn't bring any with me, from a safety perspective, at least with the union companies, that's been a big focus for us over the last several years. When this bill came up, I actually had to go back and research when the last time was that we actually had a member injured that we actually lost to a death. And that was about 1994, and it was a truck that was unfortunately overloaded up at the Fort Knox mine, as some of you actually may recall. The good thing is that there has been, from a union and employer perspective, a much greater impact or focus on safety issues out there. And we have not lost the number of workers to injuries over the years that we have, even going back, say, 15 years ago. The other point that I would add with respect to funeral costs, we're not looking at just whether it's cremation or actual casket burial type things, but in the state of Alaska in particular, just transporting the body from the location where they potentially were working back to the home site would also be an additional expense to be considered by the committee, I would hope. Anyway, we thank you for hearing the bill, and your consideration in passing this would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you. I'd like to go ahead and have the department representative come up again.
For the record, my name is Trina Hikes. I'm the Director of Workers' Compensation.
There's been... a couple of questions that have come up. Maybe you could help us over the next several weeks. I helped the bill sponsor with some data retrieval on... You mentioned the amount of deaths that have taken place, and I don't know what your database is, you can go back 5 years or 10 years and take a look at the number of deaths and the industries that they were in. And then also, I think, some assistance on costs.
Yes, sir.
I'm kind of curious on what industries. There's been discussion here, and there's some employees that are in unions, some in non-unions.
All the industry.
Yeah, it's quite a range. So we'll take a look at that.
Okay.
I just handed a list. I didn't know we had anybody in the LIOs. So we're going to take a moment here, and we're going to jump up to Anchorage under public testimony. Pick up the Mr. Daugherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kevin Daugherty, representing the Alaska Laborers, and I just three brief points, if I might. I think the bill is quite straightforward. First, I think we can all thank God the amount of deaths per year has declined, and we at one time, when I first started here in the early 80s, we had like 45 deaths per year. We're now down to the low 20s, so that's a benefit, obviously, to the workers who don't have a fatality, but it also helps us save funding in terms of the work comp insurance. Number two, I would like to point out, I sent to LIO about a half an hour ago some actual price data from various funeral homes around Alaska, if that's a bit of value to you, to look at. For example, the top document from Alaska Casket and Monument talks about a traditional funeral has escalated to now between $6,000 and $10,000. So that's for the funeral service, and then you have to add to that, if you're going to have a customary funeral, even a modest headstone, prices look like they're between $1,400 and up to $7,000 for a headstone, and sometimes you have additional costs transporting the body. So $10,000 is certainly within the realm out there, just have a basic traditional funeral. I'd like to also point out the bill will continue to cover expenses up to $10,000, but if you have a funeral that's lower than that, you're not reimbursed for anything lower than that, and I think that's fair. Third, it is worthwhile pointing out that we haven't had an increase in that that funeral expense for about 10 years. And like I say, from the data I sent down from funeral parlors around the country, around the state, you will see that, you know, in the past 10 years, they have been increases. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Okay. Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Stacy Allen.
Good morning. My name is Stacy Allen, and I'm a business agent with Laborers Local 341. We have a membership of about 2,200 employees, workers around South Central Alaska, working in construction, working in healthcare, the public sector, and on Elmendorf Air Force Base. And fortunately, we've been fortunate that there have been very few on-the-job fatalities in our local, but we have had a fairly recent experience of having to help the family of one of our members after he was killed on the job. And, of course, the emotional loss was overwhelming. But when you add to that the financial worries that come with the loss of the family's prime breadwinner, the tragedy was just compounded. And, again, fortunately, being a union household, there was a network of support in the form of, you know, unions are really big families. And so being able to take up collections for the folks, helping them with finding resources is just part of what unions do for their members. But I can imagine how much worse it would be for a non-union family. Where do you go? What do you do? How do you find help? I can't even imagine how much more such a loss is felt. And Laborers Local 341 supports SB 159. And we would urge you to support it as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. That concludes the public testimony on the bill. Do we have any final questions for the bill sponsor by chance? Senator Pascan, can you come forward, please?
This was actually for the department.
Okay, that's fine. If the department could hold on here. Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead. Don't run away.
Sorry.
I was just looking at this sheet that was prepared by the Department of Labor, and I thought I was understanding what it was till I saw the second tier of it, and it does have the fatalities listed in the upper portion from 99 through 2008. See that it dropped down rather dramatically in the early 2000s, and then it's trended up a little bit. But then I was uncertain as to what the fatality and the jurisdiction was in the lower part of the table. Starts with 224 in fiscal year of 99, running to 83 in fiscal year of 08, which are obviously different fatality numbers. So I just wasn't sure what that row was, as well as the one below it that said jurisdictional.
Did you help Senator Thomas with that?
Sure. Through the chair, this is Trina Hikas. Senator Thomas, the upper part of that data sheet indicates the actual numbers of injuries reported and deaths reported in the division. The lower portion represents the number of files open by insurers. So that 83 down there is really just cumulative from prior years, because ongoing death benefits are payable to the survivors under the statute. Naturally, the insurance carriers would have open files because they would be continuing to pay benefits. It doesn't indicate that there were 83 injuries or deaths that year. Rather, it indicates that there were 83 ongoing files open through which benefits were being paid.
And then the jurisdictional?
The jurisdictional questions are ones addressing the issue of whether or not the injury overall, this wasn't with respect to death necessarily, but through all injuries reported, there were 21 of those injuries reported. It was a question of whether or not the Workers' Compensation Act had jurisdiction over it.
Okay. Or the Fisherman's Fund or something else.
Right, or Longshore.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's helpful.
So we'll kind of condense all the miscellaneous information to just workers' compensation deaths over the last 10 years and what industries they came from. That'll get us more on point on the data. Any final questions for Senator Pascal? Okay, with that, I'd like to go ahead and set this bill aside. That concludes our labor for the day. Monday will be our next meeting at 9 a.m. We'll post that later. There's a good chance there will not be a meeting Monday, but I just want to take a look at some of that stuff, make sure. Starting on Tuesday at 9, we'll run morning and afternoon. We'll do the 2 hours, 9 to 11 in the morning and the afternoon, 1:30 to 3:30 or 1 to 3. I got to take a look at that. And we'll have that calendared for Tuesday through Friday. Friday will give us afternoon that may be canceled, but it gives us some fudge time to get back on track if we get bogged down during the middle of the week. Monday, which is a week from Monday, will also be a morning and afternoon. Next week, we're going to spend our time going through ACES, looking back to ELF, PPT, and ACES and its component parts. Tuesday, when we start this process, we're going to look at basin production numbers, and we're going to look at some labor issues, work issues, employment issues. The Commissioner of Revenue is unavailable on Tuesday, so he will be here on Wednesday, and we'll start getting into the more of the tax issues. But a week from Monday, after we've spent all next week working on the mechanisms within the tax, oil tax, and how it works, we should have on or before the committee how gas is integrated into our oil tax. And that most likely will take a morning and afternoon a week from Monday. So the reason we most likely won't have a meeting Monday is we'll be preparing for the upcoming schedule, but I just want to go over the bills and kind of check with people before that conclusion is drawn, so we'll get that posted. For the staff, you can get with Miles Baker, my staff, who's working on the schedule, so you kind of have a flow of the outline that's coming. We sat down with the Commissioner of Revenue late yesterday and kind of worked with him on how the items would proceed in order through the week. We'll also have some industry testimony, which will probably come after the oil and gas integration a week from Monday. And then we'll also have other interested groups that will be invited to attend, not in mass, but to bring one or two forward to represent themselves, to put their two cents in, because this is more of a data gathering and analysis exercise. Upon the completion of all that, then I'll have some, we'll have dialogue amongst ourselves on where we want to go with whatever conclusions fall out, and we'll put that package together, after we figure out what the conclusions of the data are. So anyway, that's kind of the layout of the workload the next week and a half. So we'll be pretty busy next week, and then we still have some bill issues going on. So I've got to figure out how I'm going to integrate some of that stuff in so we can keep moving. So just to kind of let everybody know the schedule, because I know everybody has different committee meeting or committee commitments to deal with and bill work and all this other stuff. But this is going to be a in-depth review, and it's going to get a little complicated. So I want to make sure that the department doesn't just do an accelerated review and speak in acronyms, because I want everybody at the table to understand all the component parts and the staff, and then hopefully the people at home if it's televised, so they understand when we get into the discussion a week from Monday what we're talking about.
Mr. Chairman, we could go way back to pre-ELF to modified apportionment versus separate accounting. If you wanted to get back to the origins of our tax system, but that may be too far back.
You know, I didn't, Mr. Senator Ellis, I didn't think of going that far back, but yeah, we could talk about that.
I'm not requesting that.
Yeah, or just a 15-minute high-level overview of it. Or the main thing is I want to make sure everybody understands how these are all interrelated, because every time we push on one lever, another lever pops up somewhere else, and we just need to, you know, follow along when we get into the discussion. And we're talking in the billions, so we're not, this isn't in the tens of millions.
So, Mr. Chairman, when you're talking about inviting advocacy groups to have a couple of speakers, mm-hmm. is it a broad range of folks or just the oil industry, or what would be your plan there?
Well, clearly, the initial interest was to have the industry come forward and speak, as not only do we have to have an agreement with the models, inputs, and not so much that they agree on the inputs, but the outputs. If our consultants, the administration's consultants, and the industry all have the same inputs, their output models should be similar. Because I wanted the discussion to be on policy, not on one model versus another. So they're working on that as we speak. The administration has their model by Gaffney Klein. We have ours from David Wood through LB&A. And then I think each oil company has their own. So we just need to make sure we're talking about the policy issues, not arguing about whose model does what. And then as far as advocacy groups, if there's a group that any of the members feel should be invited, just let me know. What I'm after is not a debate on production sharing contracts, but a good discussion on how does it work. And if we make any modifications, what's the outcome of it? In the modifications, we're not looking at huge deviations, but there is a couple of bills around the building, that move a couple of components. We need to have a good understanding what they are. But the main focus of this, or should say at least an equal focus, if not an overriding concern, is that when we integrate gas into it, what do we actually have on our table? And we haven't done that yet in any detail. And it just has a level of complexity that I've always been a little concerned about, because all of us have struggled with the oil component over the last 3 years, trying to understand what consultants are telling us and what the industry, how it works and how the whole system interplays with itself. But just get a hold of me if you think there's particular groups that you'd like to come forward. There's some obvious ones, like there's the RDC group, there's the AOGA group, but I'm not interested in bogging us down with days of public testimony, because we don't have a bill in front of us. This is more of a technical review. So I'm not interested in having, it doesn't serve the committee any good to have testimony come in and say the tax is too high or too low. That's not the subject at hand, it's how the tax works is what we're after. Later on, if we have a bill in front of us, we can have that debate over what's higher, what's low, or what button to push or pull. But we got to make sure we understand what we have in front of us first.
I just meant if there were going to be the Support Industry Alliance, an interest group, there are probably lots of interest groups that would like to testify. Well, it could get out of hand, I suppose.
Right. And I'm concerned about that. If it looks like it will, we'll narrow it down to just the industries form the modeling issues. To make sure that we understand how the system works. Later on, if there's actual proposal in front of the committee, if the committee decides to look at making a change or look at the effects of a particular change in detail, then we get into the whole public comment period. So this is more of a technical review. And I'm open for conversations amongst other members on what they would like to see, or control as far as so it doesn't get away from us, because we could spend months going around the totem pole and never get anything done. I'm not interested in that. So that's just kind of the layout of coming attractions. And then we have the ongoing bill work on top of us and the budget stuff. So we're going to be busy.
How many days left?
We're about almost a third through. And the other concern that we're going to be looking at next week, I should mention too, not only with gas, but with the May 1st deadline of the first open season. What impact does that have on the state of Alaska? And there's a whole range of opinions running around, and we're going to try to drill down into that so the finance committee members understand what gets tied down on May 1st and what do we have flexibility on after May 1st. And it could have a huge impact for the next 20 years on the state. So we need to have that pretty clear. As clear as we can get it anyway. Any other questions or concerns? Or with that, I'd like to go ahead and adjourn the meeting. We'll see everybody well, most likely Tuesday morning, but we'll post it in case there's something coming up Monday. Meeting adjourned.